Good morning, Mr. Speaker, and I welcome you to Parliament. This is a shorter version of our committee. Honourable Members, Parliamentary Secretary Rebecca Buttigieg, other members might join during this meeting. We meet today, it's Europe Day, 9th of May, the Schuman Declaration on 9th of May of 1950. This May, Europe Day should bring citizens together to learn more about how the EU is supporting peace, security and democracy through its resolve in the face of Russian war of aggression against Ukraine and other conflicts worldwide nonetheless. It is therefore sad that Europe Day again this year is being overshadowed by the alarming war in Ukraine and causing terrible human suffering and destabilizing post-pandemic economic recovery across the continent. Europe Day today has new challenges, and my hope is that we can take inspiration from Europe's origins as we seek solutions to today's challenges. 73 years ago, European integration began with pooling coal and steel production, while in today's Europe, we struggle to absorb sharp energy price increases while striving for climate neutrality. European nations, in my opinion, must do more, albeit small countries, Malta and Georgia, have same aspirations and goals. We remain supportive of developing stronger bilateral relations between both countries, both parliaments, but also between Georgia and the European Union for your country's commitment to pursue the European path. As a country, we value further reforms of cooperation in all areas, as well as wide-ranging assistance towards strengthening Georgia's resilience to address challenges at national but also at regional levels, including through the European Peace Facility. May I also underline that Malta continues to be an active advocate of the EU's overall enlargement process. And they also command and encourage Georgia to further pursue its overall inclusive reform process at all stages to ensure a merit-based European path, which will be to the benefit of the country and its society. Rest assured that my committee, our parliament, supports your efforts, and we are here to assist in any matter for the mutual benefit of both parliaments and countries. Thank you very much.
The Chairman, thank you very much. And indeed, we celebrated Europe Day today, and as you underlined, the European Union is a project of freedom, peace and prosperity for the people of the Europe. Unfortunately, it took two world wars to come to that level of understanding that the peace and joint efforts to increase the prosperity of the people is needed. Unfortunately, it took now also, and the aggressive war of Russia against Ukraine, that Europe reconsidered its geopolitical meaning and position in the region. But fortunately, after World War II, Europe made the right conclusions from that situation and created it at the end of the European Union, the area of peace and prosperity. And fortunately, after this after the invasion of Russia and Ukraine last year, Europe also drew a right conclusion towards enlargement of the European Union. So. And therefore, our hopes to return back to the European family, or European political family, let's say so, because even without being a part of the European Union, we are part of Europe and part of a European culture and areas, cultural area of Europe. But returning to the political Europe, for us, for Georgian people, is now more realistic, and therefore we do our best to do our homework, which actually started even after after our independence, when the struggle to be a part of the Europe, part of the NATO, was always high on a political agenda of every political forces and governments in Georgia. Especially after signing the accession agreement back in 2014, Georgia started quite routine work of harmonizing Georgia's legislation, institution with European standards, EU acquis, and European understanding of the democratic institutions. And we are quite successful on that path. Until now, Georgia already implemented almost the half of the accession agreement. It means that around 40% of EU acquis is already implemented in Georgia. So these efforts are also actually recognized by different assessments, and last assessment was end of January by the European Commission when the final assessment of the questionnaire from Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia was published. And we have seen that that Georgia, according to the merit-based assessment based on that questionnaire, is still a leader in associated trio, which at the same time, of course, gave us some kind of feeling that the decision in last June was mostly directed from the political maybe consideration than from the merits from the countries who applied for at that time for the membership. So we hope that this year the European Union and the member states will assess the progress Georgia has made during all these years, but also after the June decision of the European Council, and will assess the progress of implementing the 12 recommendations Georgia got from the European Council, and will grant the candidate status to Georgia. Of course, at the end, our ultimate goal is the membership of the European Union. This is only the milestones or steps which we have to take to come so gradually integrates our country to the European Union, but it's a needed step, and we understand that at the same time, but where we understand that it's a long way also to the membership, so we do our best on that part. So I would like also to give you a small brochure about and the 12 recommendations and implementation of that priorities, and where we assess ourselves, where we stand. So you see the green marks and the yellows, the yellow ones. So this is our self-assessment on that issue. So we are trying also to be critical to ourselves and not just check the priorities and points, but also to look from the side to how the European Union will assess our efforts, and we are actually in contact and with Brussels, with the capitals, and this is also one of the aim of visits to the member countries to explain what we have done on that issues, and the feedbacks we already have got from Brussels also is that on many areas there is already a common understanding that Georgia made progress and it could be assessed as a fulfillment of some priorities already. The assessment will be done in October by the European Commission. The decision will be in December, at the end of this year. So our goal is now to fulfill from our part to, and I mean to also the Parliament of Georgia, because we are in charge of fulfilling the priorities, to finalize our work until the end of June, when the spring session will end in Parliament. So we have 4 session weeks ahead, so we hope that by end of June we will finalize our work from our side, and then hope that these efforts will be duly assessed also by the European Union. So, and again, also from the yesterday's meeting, I really appreciate the support we feel from your side, and it really motivates us. So because it's not an easy way, it's a long way, it has a political dimension, but mostly, and the big part is a technical dimension, which is not seen actually on the surface. And this is the routine work, everyday work of the politicians, but also the public servants. And you need really a motivation on this path, because sometimes some political or institutional issues are on the surface, but in reality there are so many regulations and technical issues, and when you even need more political effort to speak with the business, representatives of the business, representatives of the society, to explain why this or that regulation is also needed, and it's not just a blind harmonization of the legislative framework with the UAKI, but these are also the regulations where the Georgia and also the businesses or other areas will benefit from. So it's a huge work, and thank you very much for motivating us also with your support.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've been in your position. We applied to join the European Union in 1990. In July of 1990, the then government, and we joined the European Union in 2004. So for us it's been a long journey, it's been hotly debated. The country was not fully backing the accession to the European Union, but nonetheless the people had their final say in a general election in 2003, and we joined a year later. But the implementation of the acquis communautaire was a long process, and indeed a very tough one, because as you said, some of it is technically, and it is a challenge to be technical, but then again, from the technical aspect, you need to get the people to understand what the technicality means in their daily lives. Because joining the European Union is a way of raising standards, and raising the standards of living, raising the standards in institution in your country's institutions, raising the standards infrastructure and agriculure. It's joining the European Union is joining a group of nations who have the high aspirations to raise the standards, and always keep on raising the standards. I don't know if any member of your team might comment, or Rebecca.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us. I don't think we need a mic, right? Thank you for receiving us. It is a great pleasure for us, and we are really thankful and grateful to you for supporting our European integration cause. But apart from progress that we have achieved in these years, we have fundamental challenges in our country. And these challenges are mostly related to Russian occupation. We have Russian troops stationed 35 kilometers away from the Parliament building in Tbilisi. And there are quite many. Before the Russian aggression against Ukraine, there were 5,000 on each of the occupied territories. Now it's less. but still they pose a great challenge to Georgia's security. In some of the areas, the occupied territory runs 300 meters away from the major highway which connects eastern Georgia to western Georgia. So if Russians want to stage a provocation, it will take them less than 15 minutes to do so. That, of course, makes our lives harder and more difficult. And the provocations on the occupation line are occurring on a daily basis, like kidnapping of our citizens. And then we need to, you know, involve the international community to have them released. And that, of course, we use a lot of diplomatic resource for that. They are building barbed wires and military installations along the occupation line, which sometimes runs through the orchards and vineyards of regular citizens, thus taking away their land and property. We have 250,000 internally displaced people, which is almost 8% of Georgia's population that cannot go back to their homes because of occupation. And finally, we do not have a functioning peace treaty with Russia. We just have the ceasefire agreement, which was mediated by the European Union almost 15 years ago, and you can maybe understand that Russians are not adhering to those ceasefire regulations. So this is a problem. Georgia doesn't have diplomatic relations with Russia. The only international format where we interact with Russians is the Geneva International Discussions, where you have EU, OSCE, and United Nations as the co-chairs, and United States, Georgia, and Russia as participants. But in the course of 15 years, we have not had any progress in the talks because Russians just don't want to have any progress. We don't have really any illusions that there will be progress in the coming months or even maybe years. But it is very important to keep this international format because it should be kept high on the international agenda. That's one thing. And secondly, we are also very worried with the developments to our south, where two of our neighbors, Armenia and Azerbaijan, are having a military conflict. That can escalate into a full-scale war again at any time. And here Georgia plays an instrumental role in providing stability because Georgia is trusted by both Armenia and Azerbaijan. We have excellent political relations with both of them. And we believe we can play an important role in mediating the talks and in achieving peace if the European Union throws its political weight behind Georgia so that we speak not only on behalf of Georgia, but we speak on behalf of the European Union. And why I'm saying that is that because especially the European Union is a strong player in the region, but it lacks also trust from both sides. And therefore, I think our efforts, if they are supported by the EU, can be more successful. And Russian aggression against Ukraine. Today, Georgia is the most exposed country to Russian aggression after Ukraine. We don't know how the scenario will develop in Ukraine, what will be the outcome of the war. But we are very concerned that if Russians are successful, Georgia would be their next target. Because the whole idea of these wars is to prevent Georgia and Ukraine from joining the West. Their aim is to make both Georgia and Ukraine not eligible for NATO membership and EU membership. So I think what Mr. Speaker has mentioned about our European integration, it's not only about the reforms, and it's not only about the culture, and it's not only about our willingness to join the European Union. It is about sovereignty and survival of Georgia and for that matter also Ukraine, of our statehood. And this, I think, should be well understood by our partners in the West. Thank you.
Thank you. Obviously, if I want to use the word weapons or preferably tools, we prefer to use diplomatic relations and mediation, and therefore we are all in favor of mediation, we're all in favor of diplomatic rapprochement in these situations, so that we can as much as possible avoid more wars in Europe. And as a country, we remain committed to upholding the EU's policy regarding the sovereignty and the territorial integrity of Georgia at all levels. My colleague, another member of Parliament of this committee, the Honourable Amanda Spiteri-Krek, has joined us. I don't know if you have any comments at this or any other comments from your end.
I would like to welcome you. Thank you for coming over. I have two friends from Georgia, Mark and Nicholas. We are in the OSCE, and it's a pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for coming. We support fully Georgia's membership application, and we would like to show our willingness to help in all that matters. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Indeed, it's a pleasure to hear such supportive words and be in this environment when you feel that you are understood and you have support, because what we are talking about and what Mr. Speaker also, highlighted, that's an extremely important topic for Georgia when it comes to European integration. Well, Nicholas highlighted security dimension, how it looks for us. Last year, when we got European perspective, indeed it was a big achievement for countries, because we did not discuss it before and it was not on the table. But once Ukraine and Moldova got candidate status and Georgia was treated differently with European perspective, of course it is kind of leaving space for speculations and interpretations, so it can be interpreted differently. And you rightly mentioned, if it is merit-based process and European integration should be in merit-based process, once the perspective is there, then Georgia is definitely one which deserves to move forward. If we look at the reforms and if we look at the achievements, what we have since 2014 when we signed the association agreement, it is really impressive. And, same time, I will not repeat what was already said. Geopolitical context is also very important and also puts Georgia in that special situation where clarity is the most important thing for Georgia, to have clear way to move towards European Union. So that's why we are trying to reach out all capitals and reach out everybody who is in charge of political decisions in the European Union. And definitely it starts from people living in different member states to achieve that decision in December, but not to leave Georgia further away from this integration process, because one question is important: what is the reading of European Union's decisions from different capitals, including Moscow, how they may read and may interpret, because we have also experience of 2008 when we were promised to be part of the NATO and the door was open for Ukraine or Georgia, but we never achieved to become part of the NATO. So that, and then we faced war in 2008 and Russian intervention to Georgia. So that is the kind of security threats that the country still faces, and clarity is very important. And again, thank you for your support, because that's very important. We need more people like you in the room once the decision is taken in December. So I hope that we will get that support from Maltese side and other countries as well. On our side, we will continue doing to meet the priorities.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I think not Georgia should be, but shall be, mm-hmm. which makes a lot of difference, obviously.
Just let me add a few more issues. It was highlighted the situation about Ukraine in your initial speech, as well as Georgia's vulnerable situation with the occupied territories. In 2008, Georgia has faced Russian aggression. And unfortunately, response was not sufficient, because there was no single sanction introduced by the European Union to Russia regarding this aggression, and up to today more than 20% of our territories are occupied by Russia, and as my colleagues have already underlined, Russian troops illegally are presented on our territories, and it's a security threat on a daily basis. We were somehow warning Europe that Russia will not stop at this level, and then we have faced 2014 when they occupied Crimea, and then it was the annexation process took place, and Russia has recognized it as a part of its territories. And still, I think that the response was not sufficient. And then later we've got 2022, and we are still facing this unbelievable horror, what is taking place in Ukraine. It should be underlined that Georgia is doing almost everything what we can do in our position to support Ukraine. And especially it is important on a political level, because we've been a party and even co-sponsoring up to 500 resolutions and documents and statements in support of Ukraine. Also, it should be highlighted that Georgia is one of among 36 countries which have applied to the Criminal Court of The Hague to start investigations regarding the war crimes which are taking place on the territory of Ukraine. As well as we have accommodated more than 30,000 Ukrainian refugees, which are officially registered and provided with relevant assistance by the government. However, the number is quite higher, because there are lots of friends, relatives, mixed families, and those people are individually supported by Georgians, and they are not registered in this registry. So what I want to say is that, of course, we stand with Ukraine, and for us it is important that our partners are aware about activities we are doing just to support in such a difficult period. However, it should be highlighted that our situation is not less, it's quite difficult, because as Nicholas has mentioned, Georgia can be the most realistic that next in a row if Russia succeeds. And therefore, we need strong support from our Western partners. And what is this support? First of all, that Russia gets a message from you that Georgia is part of the euro. And the last year decision about granting perspective was first step in this direction. However, we need more stronger step, which means that we really deserve, because it's a fair request from our side, from our people, from our country, to be more integrated. And that's why we are doing our best to get the status of candidate of the European Union. Here we look for our allies, and we very much depend on your support in this direction, and we do hope that a fair approach and fair decision will be taken this year, and Georgia will get its status of candidate, and we will continue further progressing to achieve the main goal, which has been already introduced in the Constitution, that Georgia's main goal is to become a member of the European Union and North Atlantic Alliance. It's written in the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As you said, and also your colleague addressed, obviously Russia's aggression against Ukraine represents a threat to multilateral system. The European Union and Europe is a Europe of multilateral countries, and Russia's aggression represents a direct threat to that multilateral system. No effort should be spared in safeguarding our common values and rights with, obviously, the United Nations as its core. And Malta has a seat on the Security Council of the United Nations during this term, and we continue to use that seat on the Security Council to work with partners towards towards this end, towards to reach peace, to reach so that this war and Russia's aggression may end. I think if this yes.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's great pleasure to be with you. My name is Katy. I represent an opposition party in Georgia, political party Citizen. I truly believe that we need Europe. We need to build closer international relationship with you and with other European friends. Our country has challenges, but we are here to persuade you that Georgia is part of Europe and it should be part of EU. Recent studies in Georgia have shown that almost 90% of our population sees their future in Europe, and my colleagues also mentioned that there is another geographical reality. And Ukraine's experience clearly demonstrates that Russia is a real threat for Georgia. And as you know, Russia still occupies 20% of Georgia. And accepting Georgia as candidate will certainly mitigate this threat. And it's very important, your support, and thank you for your support today and in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. It's very important that you are united as a country. Both government and opposition have the same goals and aspirations. Yes, Ms. Yes. Yes, the public are allowed. This is streamed live as well. This meeting, all meetings are live streamed. The public is allowed. Media are allowed as well when they ask and be granted permission to cover such events. Yes, it's open to public. Yes, they are allowed to sit in the room. They can follow us online. And
are the representative of the public allowed to ask questions?
Yes. There are nearly in all committees, especially the ones who are drafting the law, when the Westminster model, so the third stage of the parliament, is that the parliament resolves in committee, and that committee goes through every clause of amendments to the bill which will be being discussed in parliament at that stage. members of the public, civil society, NGOs can come here and have their say, and also during other committee settings they can come. In fact, we have a lot of such discussions.
And by the way, in the committee meeting, so every clause is discussed. And at the plenary, do you discuss every clause of the bill, or it's just?
So we have two committees to deal with such a bill. But yes, there are certain either situations, or when both government and opposition agree that instead of going to a committee, the parliament will resolve into a committee, and the bill is in its third stage is debated in the plenary. Yes, but it will not be the plenary; it will be the committee of the House meeting in the plenary.
Ah, okay. But if the committee discusses every detail of the bill, it says so that every clause. Then the procedure is other in during the plenary. Is there not so detailed discussion? Is just voting, or it's also
pardon?
So in the committee, when you discuss the bill, draft bill, so you go close to one norm to another,
yes.
Article by article,
yes.
In the committee. So it is discussed, and the committee will have some decision. Then it goes to the plenary session for the voting. But is there also the same discussion in details of
it? The process for our bill is like, if I give you a full picture of how bill goes through the stages. So first there is the first reading, which is the only the title of the bill, which will be read by the minister in the plenary. Then within 7 days, the bill is published. Once published, it's put on the agenda. When Parliament debates it in the second reading, that is the debate, where you can debate on the generalities, where you can debate, you have your opinions and what you want to say about the bill in itself. Then, once the bill is approved from the second reading stage, we go to the third reading. The third reading is the committee stage. We have two committees to deal with such stages, but it can also be held in the plenary as a committee, not as a plenary. And at that stage, the bill the committee goes through each clause, and a vote is taken on each clause, on each article of the bill. Then there is the final vote on the third stage. Once the third stage is over, the chairman of the committee reports to the speaker that the bill has passed through the committee stage, either with amendments or without amendments, depends on the bill. That is the fourth stage. Then the fifth stage is the third reading, whereby the minister responsible reads the title and the final vote is taken before the bill is implemented into law.
But there is no more in detail discussion during the plenary. So this article
the only debate, general debate, is the second stage. The third stage is a more technical, where every word of the bill is debated. Those are the two.
So we have actually in our system we have. Like duplicated, so the in detail article by article discussion in the committee, in the second reading, and then afterwards in the plenary we have the same article by article discussion during the plenary sessions. Mm-hmm. So there are no different procedures in the committee and in the plenary. So we have three readings, first, second and third reading. First is on the principle, but not just the title, but discussion in the principle of the principle of the bill. The second reading is article by article discussion in the committee, and the same goes during the plenary session, article by article. And the third reading is just editorial issue, so like wording or like comma point, etc.
So we have adopted the Westminster model.
Yeah. It's more efficient actually, because in detail article by article discussion during the plenary session takes a lot of time. Yeah.
It used to be like that up until the committees were established, which were, I believe, towards the end of the or mid-90s. When the committees were established, then it shifted to a committee.
But you also said that you have 17 committees, but only three are dealing with the draft laws? Or three?
Two.
Like legal committee or...?
It's a committee for consideration of bills and the committee of consideration of bills adjunct.
Yeah, and other 15 committees, they are like inquiry.
We have the public accounts committee, okay. which analyzes and scrutinizes the government expenditure. We have the social affairs committee, the foreign and European affairs committee, the health committee. We have the House Business Committee, actually, which decides what goes on the agenda and what Parliament and all the Parliament technicalities are discussed. We have a committee on the standards in public life, which we have a standards Commissioner for Standards in Public Life, which makes investigation if any member of Parliament or in public life breaches the code or breaches an ethic, makes an investigation. We have the Committee of Privileges, the Health Committee, the Petitions Committee. The Petitions Committee is one important committee whereby citizens can make a petition to Parliament. And they can come and discuss the petitions with the parliamentarians in the committee stage. The National Audit Office Accounts Committee is another committee.
How many persons can initiate a petition? At least.
And there is no hard and fast rule. There is no few tens, few hundreds. And few thousands will get the same. No. Even I believe one person can make a petition to Parliament. So there's not necessarily a large number of signatures needed.
Yeah, interesting.
The parliamentary procedures are very interesting. In fact, at the moment I'm currently. Reviewing the parliamentary procedures and to make Parliament more effective, because these standing orders, because we call them standing orders, deriving from the British Westminster model again, have been with us for 100 years and only a few times they were reviewed, and now we are going to review all the process. And we will add some new procedures to Parliament, obviously with cross-party agreement.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Thank you very much. I wish you well in your aims and in your goals. And as we said, you have our full support.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you, first of all, thank you very much for your support and motivation. Which is really needed for in this time when you are dealing with the big goals and big issues, and we count on the friendship between our parliaments. We count on your support and your motivation for us to be more active in the process of approximation of our institution and political system with the European one. So thank you very much, and I hope that the next time we will meet, we will be on the next stage of integration with the European Union. So thank you very much.
Thank you.